As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
In Amsterdam on Sunday, anger that had been bubbling for months at Ajax finally boiled over. The biggest fixture in Dutch football was abandoned and riot police dispatched as supporters tried to regain access to the stadium.
Paisal, 3-0 Feyenoord.
Feyenoord were 3-0 up when this game was abandoned at around 58 minutes.
But that was only the start. These were chaotic scenes which are a shame on Dutch football.
For club legends like Marco van Basten, Ajax's identity crisis is deepening. So today, we explore how a club, Champions League semi-finalist under Erik ten Hag just a few years ago, imploded. And while there's no shortage of targets for fans' frustration, what role has Arsenal's former transfer chief played in all of this? I'm Ayo Akinwolere. Welcome to the Athletic Football Podcast. So joining me today, The Athletic's Kyle Anka and also Simon Hughes, who've this morning actually published a brilliant article all about the crisis unfolding at Ajax. We're also joined by Sjoerd Mossu, chief football writer for Dutch newspaper Algemeen Dagblad. Sjoerd, Ajax are playing at this moment in time. I think by the time we finish recording this podcast, the game would have finished. But take us back to what happened over the weekend.
Everybody's really sad and angry about what happened on Sunday, of course. But first, it's kind of important to know that the Dutch FA, they introduced a protocol last season after the Klassieker in Rotterdam. Maybe you know, Ajax player Davy Klaassen was hit by a lighter from the fans, and they kind of made stricter rules to stop. Well, they decided to stop games immediately when objects are thrown onto the pitch. And if that happens a second time in a game, the match will be stopped immediately. So that's kind of the basic protocol that was introduced at the last Klassieker in Rotterdam. That gave a lot of problems because a lot of games were stopped in the last few months. But it also gives power to fan groups who wants to kind of sabotage the games. And that's what basically happened on Sunday. Feyenoord were the much better team. They were 3-0 up, and the fans from the F side, the hardcore fans at the Ajax Stadium, they just tried to sabotage the match by throwing fireworks onto the pitch. So it was a deliberate act to end the game, basically.
Yeah, this is remarkable. I was at the last Klassieker in Amsterdam in March. Ajax lost that one 3-2. Pretty much a last-minute goal from Feyenoord. And as I said on Daily Briefing Show, it's really important to remember, at Klassikers, it's only home support. There are no away fans there. And I believe, Sjoerd, that there was a warning given out not long after the third goal from the stadium announcers and referees saying, if you continue to throw pyrotechnics, the game will get abandoned. And Ajax fans essentially took that as a challenge and went, we will continue this business to get this game called off, because what's happening on the field is, frankly, an embarrassment to Ajax fans. They didn't want the game to be 90 minutes of possibly more goals conceded. So they went out of their way to get things finished.
Yeah, exactly. And the same happened in a local derby in the second division Willem Twee versus NAC Breda a couple of weeks ago. So the game was finished straight away after, I think, about an hour. And they had to reschedule the game without people in the stadium. It is a problem. We have a problem with fan behavior in Holland, that's for sure. But we can't find a decent solution to end it.
And as a consequence, am I imagining that there won't be any fans at today's match?
No, the stadium is totally empty. That's part of the protocol as well. So when a game is finished or stopped, they have to finish it in an empty stadium as soon as possible.
Just looking at the results so far this season, how do fans feel about manager Maurice Stijn?
Well, the manager is not very popular, of course, because they're a 14th in the league, which is unbelievable because they still have the most expensive squad in the Dutch league. They're playing terrible football. The manager is on gets a lot of critics, but kind of everybody gets a lot of critics at Ajax at this moment. Everybody is under pressure, from the technical director, who already was sacked last Sunday, Sven Mislintat, but also the board of directors, the manager. Everybody's afraid of losing his job at this moment.
Sorry, Simon, this has been a long time coming, really. It's since the Ten Hag era, you know, Ajax prominent in the Champions League, playing beautiful football, fantastic players. But it seems to have been a bit of a downward spiral since Ten Hag left the club.
Sort of look back to 2019, Ajax got so close to the Champions League final, you know, within seconds, really, and lost to Spurs. We went on to lose to Liverpool. And I think across Europe, I wouldn't say it was seen as a relaunch of Ajax because it felt inevitable that they'd lose players. But it felt, you know, that the club was in a decent position to sort of position itself as one of the sort of the European elite clubs again, who could go far in competitions, put it that way. You know, the money that the club would earn from some of the players that they sold should have put them in a position where they could reinvest adequately enough to at least, you know, more on a more regular basis, I would say, appear in the sort of the knockout stages and the latter stages of the European competitions. That hasn't quite happened. When Mark Overmars left the club, I went over to Amsterdam to cover that story, and I'm sure everybody here is aware of the circumstances in which he left. Subsequently went again at the start of last season, when there was a sort of a big vacuum, really, between his leadership and Edward van der Sar's leadership, to the position that they found themselves in, when it wasn't quite clear who was really making the decisions about strategy. Took van der Sar a long time to announce Overmars's replacement, Sven Mislintat, who Sjoerd mentions was sacked on Sunday. So there's been a big power vacuum at the club over a long period of time, you know, 18-month period of time, really. And it just seems like, you know, as Sjoerd rightly put in his article, it feels like there's a lot of people who are responsible for this, you know, but no one in particular, which sort of shows you where the problems are, really. There's not really anyone in control of what's really happening at Ajax, and hasn't been for some time.
I think what Simon rightly identifies is what happens to a lot of clubs outside of, let's say, the traditional heavy hitters in Champions League football, that gets far into Champions League. We've seen this with various Dortmund teams. We've seen this with the Monaco side of 2018-19 that got to Champions League and got knocked out against Juventus. And when that Ajax team of Matthijs de Ligt, Frenkie de Jong came through, there was also the talk that eventually all of these players would leave, and de Jong would leave, and Matthijs de Ligt would leave and whatnot. And one big thing about that team, the original team that got to the semi-final and played against Spurs, the salary was quite high. The predecessor to Mark Overmars had to keep salaries up. I believe the predecessor was told you couldn't give anyone a salary of less than €1 million a year. And then Overmars made a number of big swings to help build that first great Ten Hag team. So Daley Blind got brought back, and he was very important to, you know, vertical progression up the field. Dusan Tadic was taken from Southampton, and he became the captain. And, you know, he got that rare 10 out of 10 from Lequipe for his performance against Real Madrid. So it looked as if they were going to avoid that, especially when Ten Hag created another good team, which had Ryan Gravenberg, Edson Alvarez and whatnot. And it really seemed that would continue. Then, of course, Overmars left in disgrace for very, very good reasons. And what's happened is not just... what's happened is this very odd split where there's a section of Ajax fans who would very much want him back. And he, you know, Van der Sar was cornered after the 3-2 Clasica last season by Ajax fans. And a number of them said, we've got to bring Overmars back. He's the key to everything. And what's also become apparent is in the months since Overmars left basically zero institutional apparatus. So much of what made him, and I'm putting this in air quotes, good at his job was the fact that he was Mark Overmars and he had a big phone book and a WhatsApp that if you text certain people, they'd pay attention. Whereas what he should have done is built an infrastructure and correctly identify a scouting system. So you had a lot of people pushed into new roles to make up for the absence of Overmars who were given essentially no handover notes because Overmars left no handover notes. And then you've get into the, sure, please don't take this in the wrong way, what I can only describe as a very Dutch form of decision-making, which can very often lead to a lot of meetings, a lot of direct talking, but not necessarily a lot of things being done. I highly recommend the book Brilliant Orange. There's a section in there about how they built Amsterdam Schiphol Airport. You know, this is the biggest airport in the Netherlands. And before they did it, everyone involved went, we're not going to put a Dutch person in charge because if we do, this will take forever. So they deliberately went out and saw a British architect.
Totally true. Totally true.
So what's happened at Ajax now is you've had a power vacuum, a lack of handover notes, and the difficult attempt at modernization from Ajax. So Van der Sar first tried to, you know, break up Overmars' job into a number of different roles. He gave a role to Hamstra and to Klaas-Jan Huntelaar in the wait for Sven Mislintat. Mislintat came in. Mislintat made a number of big swings. So they got a data scientist, Vost van der Boot, and she wasn't well received by a number of traditionalists who, as you can imagine, on Dutch television are going, why is and data analyst working for a club the size of Ajax, and why is this person? And I'm being, unfortunately, yes, you can imagine there's been quite some sexist comments about her as well. Mislintat himself has a huge reputation for being a data person and looking for overachievers and gems and essentially trying to do Moneyball. And his hit rate there is hit or miss. There's another individual, I believe, who got brought in it, and they have a field hockey background. I forget their name.
True, that's Maurits Hendricks.
Thank you.
He's called Chief Operations Officer or something.
And what does that mean?
Nobody knows.
Yes,
nobody
so knows. It's a brand new role. It's a brand new role at Ajax, and they've hired someone who's ex-hockey. And again, it's caused a lot of controversy in Dutch television, where you've got the likes of Wesley Sneijder and Rafael van der Vaart going, Ajax doesn't need this.
And Maurits Hendricks is kind of a famous guy in Holland, well-known for hockey. And he was kind of brought in to help Van der Sar, basically, because Edwin van der Sar is like a former player, a lot of charisma, a lot of history. But he's not a typical director, CEO kind of guy. So Hendricks was brought in to help him, but it didn't work out. Van der Sar left, and it got even more complicated, basically.
Can I ask you a question? There's one thing that I felt writing. I always feel about writing about Ajax. You cannot mention Ajax in any article without mentioning Johan Cruyff. You know, it's impossible to actually write, mainly because the stadium's named after him now. So you're literally obliged to write it to get your facts right. But how much of a strength is his history and personality upon the club? But also, how much does it hold the club back to some extent? Because, you know, a lot of his methods would be probably considered now traditional. At the time, they were revolutionary, but now they probably, you know, he was quite obviously very instinctive in the way he sort of ran his football teams and organised his players. Whereas, you know, Carl was mentioning there about Mislintat and, you know, the whole data-led approach. You know, it just feels like there's a big cultural sort of clash there between what Ajax want to be and, you know, what they have been.
Well, you've said it right. It's a combination of romance, tradition, culture, and the way to modernization. Football changed a lot. And I think Erik ten Hag and Mark Overmars, they both knew, and they were kind of modern kind of football guys. And they built the bridge between former centuries and this age, and they did it right. They did it very good because in a very old-fashioned way, in the way they worked together. As Carl said, Overmars was kind of an old school kind of guy. He didn't work with Excel sheets. He was just texting people when he wanted to buy a player. He just texted the amount, and that was it. They had a very special relationship on the football side of the story, and that kind of worked out. And I think that covered up how complicated Ajax is in a cultural way. There were just two guys on the right time in history working together very good. And when they left, everything was complicated again. Mm. It was like back in the old days.
Yeah, Tommy, we were talking about this just before we came on in terms of major clubs, big clubs, a lot of people handling a lot of money. And then you sort of lift the lid and you look behind the curtain and you're like, does anyone actually know what they're doing? You can name names in the Premier League, for instance. I mean, how surprising is it that Ajax are in this situation from your perspective?
I'm really torn on this discussion because, despite what I said before the podcast, when I was quite dismissive, but I am quite torn because I do tend to think that the football clubs at the highest end are still, in some ways, run by, shall we say, you know, dictators, really. You know, sort of the force of personality, you know, sometimes overrides everything else that's going on. So maybe I'm looking at too much through the prism of Liverpool, you know, who I write about quite a lot, where Jurgen Klopp has got all the power. Now, that could be seen as a good thing if a manager sticks around for long enough to justify, you know, all of the collateral that comes with that. The problem is when, you know, you give the power to people who might move on or might not move on. Now, obviously with Mark Overmars, I guess his departure would have been considered unexpected, and certainly in the circumstances. I think the key is to try and sort of strike the balance between, you know, a system where there are certain measures in place for balances and checks, and one where a manager is, or a manager or a leadership group, if you like, that's a new football lingo, isn't it? Leadership groups are allowed to sort of express themselves in a way that allows them to perform. Now, I don't know anywhere that really does that, if I'm being honest, where you've got the balance between the two. So it's this like almost untouchable thing, really. You know, you know, people will point towards, well, Brighton are doing really well, but they obviously are by their standards, but it's still not being tested at the highest, very highest level. So I just feel at the moment there's this sort of untouchable thing where no club really has got it right. Maybe it is impossible to get it right.
Guys, I got some breaking news.
What?
Well, the chairman of the supervisory board of Ajax, Pierre Eringa, he decided to leave just a few minutes ago.
Wow.
45 minutes before the game. So he's the next guy who's leaving.
And he was appointed in March. Is that was right? Isn't it sure?
That's right. Yeah, he was appointed in March, and there was a lot of critics on him as well from the fans. They kind of really wanted him to leave, and he just left. So won't be the last, and he's the second.
This feels controversial to say. If you are not an Ajax fan, and if you are not someone who grew up loving Ajax and watching them in the Champions League, this might be good for Dutch football. You know, Ajax win four. Ajax traditionally win the Dutch league. They won four in a row when Erik ten Hag came in, and they often go on runs where they win three or four titles in a row, and then they essentially have to do this, have to have this implosion, have to make this sort of mistake to open the door for final, to open the door for PSV Eindhoven, to open the door for FC 20, to open the door for AZ Alkmaar. And there was a lot of talk under Ten Hag, when Ten Hag was there, that Ajax were going to try and turn themselves into the Bayern Munich of the Netherlands, which I'm still very, very angry about how last season's Bundesliga ended. I don't watch too much Bundesliga now because I think it's a foregone conclusion that Bayern will win the title. And I only really get involved when I think a team's going to finish second, which is now its own miniature trophy. So Ajax were attempting to do that sort of action to the Dutch league, to use that Champions League revenue to create the richest squad, to get the best players, to get the best manager, and to be so far ahead of everyone else that they were going to just basically compete with other Champions League teams. And if you are an Ajax fan and you are a fan of history, that's great. If you're a fan of FC Twente and AZ Alkmaar, Ajax being in a bit of a mess is probably quite good. If you're a fan of Feyenoord, this is probably quite fun because for years you've been saying Ajax are horribly arrogant and they're not that special, and it's all in front of you. So this is the difficult thing. I was speaking to my very good Dutch friend who's based in Amsterdam at the moment, and he said, you know, Ajax tried being the Bayern Munich of the Netherlands, and now they're like the Manchester United of the Netherlands in that they've got all this money, but they've just weird dysfunction around. And a little bit like Manchester United, they've got here because they talk a lot about the past. They spend a lot of money trying to bring back the glory days of the past, and they haven't quite figured out what a modern football club does of that size.
The massive difference between this crisis and the last big Ajax crisis in 2010, between 2010 and 2012, was that Johan Cruyff was still alive. That was a very complicated crisis as well, comparable to this one, a very cultural and political kind of crisis as well. But the difference was, for the main audience, like there was Johan Cruyff and all the other guys against Johan Cruyff. So it was like a cartoonesque kind of situation. You were with Cruyff or against him. Behind it, it was just as complicated as it is now, but that made it kind of easy to understand for the main public. And now nobody really knows who to support in rebuilding the club. So nobody knows where Ajax has to go in the next few years.
You're listening to the Athletic Football Podcast with Ayo Akinwalere.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Who's in charge of doing this? Who's in charge of putting this jigsaw back together so we at least see a progressive line of where Ajax could possibly be? It might not be this season, but at least so fans can say, okay, I can see it now. This guy is, or this person is doing the job, and what they're going to do is bring in blah, blah, blah from here, blah, blah, blah from here, because we can start building the Ajax that we love again to start challenging at the highest level.
And there are two names mentioned very, very often. One of them is Louis van Gaal, because he's kind of the most influential living figures now.
But then we're going back. We're going back.
True. But he does. He won't do it because he has physical problems, health problems. So he already told that he doesn't want to have a function at Ajax at this time. And the other name, which is kind of funny, is the manager of Feyenoord, Arne Slot. He's generally regarded as the best manager in Holland at this moment. He's playing football very close to where Ajax wants to be, and he seems like the perfect Ajax manager, but working at Feyenoord, and it's impossible to get him. They won't get him straight away. Maybe they get him in about 5 to 10 years, but for now that's not an option. Feyenoord will never let him go to Ajax. But that's the thing. Van Gaal is a guy from the past who doesn't want to do it anymore. They won't get Arne Slot in the next few years. No way. So there's nobody else. You have a lot of former players like Marco van Basten and Wesley Sneijder and Clarence Seedorf, and but they don't have the power and influence to do it on their own, you know?
There isn't a person at Ajax to go and get the person that's needed to do it. It's worth just very briefly explaining that structure, isn't it? I think I've got this right. So there's a supervisory board that appoints like the technical directors and, you know, leads the recruitment around technical director, sporting director, who then has the responsibility of hiring the manager, who then all combine to work to sign the players. And at the moment, the players aren't good enough, allegedly. You know, the manager isn't, you know, very popular and isn't viewed as being good enough. You know, there's a big vacuum at the technical sporting area. And as Shaw has just said, the head of the supervisory board has just resigned. So who is making the decisions? It's a constitutional mess.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to the Athletic Football Podcast with Ayo Akinwole.
I just want to bring back a name that was mentioned earlier, Sven Mislintat. Arsenal fans might remember him as being head of recruitment there. Where does he come into this story?
No, he was sacked on Sunday after the final game, or the first part of the final game. Well, they couldn't find a successor of Marc Overmars for 16 months. And they tried to do it with a combination of technical directors, as you told before, Van der Sar, Huntelaar and Hamstra, and that didn't work out. So in the end, they kind of decided to get somebody with a totally different background. He's German. He worked for Arsenal and Borussia Dortmund. And they kind of gave him the keys to solve a few problems. They had a massive problem with the player salaries. Without reaching the Champions League, it was impossible to pay that many players that big salaries at Ajax. So he had to reduce the salaries. He had to sell a lot of players because the team was kind of finished in a certain way. Players were getting a bit older. Some players had to leave. So he had a lot of work to do, a lot. When he started, I think it was in April, when he started. So it was very complex. In a certain way, he was kind of independent. He was just thinking, I do it my own way, and if they don't like me, then they're going to sack me. That's fine. It's my way or the highway, if you know what I mean. And that's how he worked. So he just started in his own way. He used his own network. He didn't want to talk with the old scouts at Ajax because he didn't take them very seriously. No, there was no a supervisory board that kind of checked him on doing transfers, on doing his work. And yeah, well, that finally led to that many critics that there was no way back for him to leave.
Mm. What would you say were his biggest triumphs, or dare I say mistakes at Ajax? Because I think about him bringing Steph Lichtenstein to Arsenal. That didn't go down too well. But, you know, obviously people will bring players in and some might work, some might not work. In terms of the personnel that he has brought to Ajax, how has that been viewed?
Well, the strange thing was that he bought 12 players and only one of them was kind of known in Holland, Branko van der Bomen, the only Dutch guy of the 12. And he bought players from the second division in France and in Germany. A player from St. Pauli in Germany, a player from Metz in France, Miko Tatze. He bought a player from Middlesbrough, as you know, Akpom.
Former Arsenal, yeah.
And all his 12 signings were kind of unknown, young, pretty expensive though. And everybody was surprised that he didn't get any, how do you say it, we call it zekerheidjes in Dutch, but it's a player where you kind of know what you get, if you know what I mean. If you take back, for example, Joel Veltman of Brighton, you know that he's an Ajax player. And you know that he's used to a certain level. He didn't get Noah Lang, the PSV player now. He didn't get Jordi Schouten, who was a good midfielder at Bologna, who went to PSV as well. There was no certainty among all 12 players. That was the strangest thing of everything, I think, because when you get just three or four good Dutch players who speak the language, who know the culture of playing as well, then there's no problem when you get six youngsters. It's like an experiment. Mm. He brought in 12 players out of the blue, and Ajax turned into kind of a Sven Mislintat experiment.
There's obviously the, you know, the accusations against them which were made last week in the Dutch press, which relate specifically to a transfer that was made very late in the window, Borna Sosa, who came from Stuttgart, which was Sven Mislintat's former club, where it was the suggestion is, and I have to be careful what I say here legally, but that basically that the deal for this player was sort of sanctioned through an agency which owns shares in a private company that Mislintat founded 4 years ago. And, you know, there's a problem for Ajax with that because of, you know, they float on the stock exchange, don't they? And, you know, there's complications around that for Ajax, who subsequently launched an internal investigation. This was, you know, days before Mislintat got sacked. Although when he was sacked after the final game on Sunday, the club suggested in its statement that the sacking had nothing to do with this investigation. So it will be really interesting to see whether the club still investigates, whether it has the power to do so, because he's no longer an employee. You know, I mean, he was targeted, wasn't he, on Sunday, you know, for criticism as well. I think it should be added, along with the supervisory board. You know, they came in for the most sort of vocal criticism. He brought in around 160 million euros in sales, which is quite impressive considering one or two of the players, you know, were top level players, but not all of them. You know, I would say he probably got some good, you know, decent money for a lot of the players, but you know, half of that was spent on, you know, on players who, as Sjoerd says, has question marks over their abilities.
I was going to say, Sjoerd, back to sort of Carl's point as well, where does this leave the Dutch league? Because look, you know, people that might not watch the Dutch league might be used to seeing Ajax up top a lot. Now we have an interesting bit of competition. This season in particular, if Ajax aren't going to take the top prize, who else are we looking at to maybe take the top prize this season?
Well, it will be a race between Feyenoord and PSV, I think. They're the best teams in the league at this moment. And the interesting thing is that for the first time in years, we've got two straight Champions League spots, places. In the last few seasons, only the champion was in the group stage of the Champions League. Now we got two straight in the Champions League. So that gives a lot of power to Feyenoord and PSV financially to kind of narrow the gap with Ajax. That makes it very interesting. What you said about being the Bayern Munich of Holland, the big difference between the Dutch league and the Bundesliga is, of course, you can't keep your best players. Bayern Munich can keep the best players. They can keep their best squad. And Ajax have to sell every summer. So that makes it kind of difficult or different. But I think it's very interesting that there's going to be a kind of a power exchange in the Dutch league. It's always good to have more strong teams than just one.
Yeah, I was going to actually ask you about that. Maybe I'll come to you about that, Simon. Yeah, I mean, if you're a Dutch football fan, you have to be remiss to the fact that you are going to lose your best players every season. And it's quite an interesting strategy in general. Is that sustainable over a long period of time? I mean, I guess it works within the Dutch league, but if you're trying to win the Champions League, for instance, if you're trying to win the top prizes across Europe.
There's moving parts around the football club as well. It's not just about what your football club does. It's what other Dutch clubs are doing at the same time. You know, so Ajax will hope that their crisis so obviously won't go on for too long, but doesn't coincide with a period where suddenly, you know, PSV, it feels more like Feyenoord at the moment, are really building, you know, the momentum and becoming, you know, if you were a top Dutch player at the moment, you had a choice between Ajax or Feyenoord, given how Feyenoord started the Champions League campaign, you're probably going to choose Feyenoord, aren't you? So I do. I think running a football club is actually terribly hard. You know, whichever level you're at, it's not easy. There's not easy solutions. But the concern, as I said, for Ajax at this moment in time is that it feels like a club that has almost lost its institutional memory and is trying to refine it without really knowing as well whether using that memory as a force of strength is the right thing to do.
Well, it is literally rock bottom if you compare it to the history of Ajax. When they have lost the game against Feyenoord, then they have the worst start of a season since the 64-65 season, which was kind of a stone age in Dutch history. It can't get worse, but if you look at the schedule, they have to play in the next six games, they have to play five away, including Brighton, including Ajax, including Utrecht, which is difficult, including AZ. So I can't see any massive change in the next few weeks, to be honest.
Well, since recording, as Carl rightly predicted earlier on in the pod, there is no dramatic comeback from Ajax. Feyenoord scored straight from the off, finishing 4-0 winners to add more misery to the Amsterdam team. Thanks so much to our guests, Sjoerd, Simon, and also Carl for your mad prediction as well. Don't forget you can sign up to The Athletic today and read that Ajax piece in full, as we mentioned at the top of the pod, for a special limited time offer of just £1 a month for 12 months at theathletic.com/footballpod. Thanks so much for listening.
You've been listening to The Athletic Football Podcast. The producers were Adonis Pratsides and Guy Clark, with additional production by Mike Stavro and Jay Beal. The executive producer was AD Moorhead.
The Athletic.